So, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Next slide, please. To tell the truth, when I got the assignments from Jack, I was not real keen on this topic, dominion. And the reason I wasn't was because I made a mistake internally that many men make, which is to say that dominion equals domination, taking control, mastery. That's not what it means in this context. Dominion says, or domination says, I'm in charge, I will rule. And except in and over these domains. So I'm going to talk about what dominion means in a minute. For those of you who haven't read the book yet, and it is a great book. If somebody has a copy, could you hold it up? Okay, there you go. Titus on 10. The book is not, in my opinion, it's not really a study of Titus. The book is a study of biblical manhood that's structured around the book of Titus sort of as an outline. So it makes it particularly valuable for looking at the issues associated with manhood, which I think is why Jack chose it. So dominion says, domination says, I'll rule over these domains. And he says the domains is the second term I wanted to talk about, which is in the book, he outlines four areas that I'll go through in overview, and they'll be discussed later in much more detail with other speakers, areas where we need to take dominion. The four areas are myself, my flesh, and you'd say the second one is my family. Nope, that's not the second one. The second one is the church, and I'll explain that when we get to it. The third one is my family, and the fourth one is the workplace. Each of us has, whether you're single or not, each of us has all four. And we need to do what the scriptures say about taking dominion in those four areas. But in three of the four areas, dominion does not equal domination. It equals sacrificial servanthood. The one area where I can see that dominion would equal domination is the flesh. There, I need to conquer and to hold that territory for Christ. And that's a lifelong battle. All of us know it. But that's an area where take no prisoners is probably the rule. So Genesis 2:15, God gives Adam his task. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till it and to keep it. Those words, till, work, serve, labor, pretty much as you'd expect. Keep, guard, and protect. So labor and protect sounds still applicable today, whether you're a farmer or not. The last point, which is a really important point for men, married men to remember, Adam was not given dominion, domination, or dominion over Eve. They were co-laborers in creation. So, yeah, if you do a marriage study, you're sure to go through Ephesians 5, 21 to 33, and it talks about the wife being submissive to the husband, and that's true, and that's something that wives have to work on. Husbands don't have to work on that part, because that's not a task given to us. Our task is to love and to serve sacrificially. And then God works with our wives on the submission part. And frankly, if we were a lot better at the loving and serving sacrificially, maybe they'd be better at the submission part. Just a thought. Next slide, please. Could you roll the next one? Okay, there we go. Good. Church and family. Remember I said church came second in the book. And I thought, and he, as he enters in the discussion of the domain of church, he says, a lot of people will think this is wrong to put church second instead of family. But here's why he does it. The church is the laboratory where we learn how to exercise godly dominion over the other domains. That's why he puts it second. And there's a third, so we've looked at dominion, we've looked at domains. I'd like to look at the third D that Nate came up with, which is discipleship. When Nate or Scott come up here and talk about all those opportunities to serve, I'm going to give you a little hint about Scott, and he probably doesn't want me to disclose it because it's, you know, maybe a character assassination to disclose it. But Scott really is like a drug dealer when he shows that slide. Scott's goal, yeah, does he need to get those slots filled? Sure, he does. Church needs it, needs us to step into those. But his bigger goal is not just to get those slots filled. His bigger goal is, without you knowing it, to get you next to other godly men. Because that's how one of the ways, the scriptures and other godly men, are the two main ways God helps us to grow into disciples. You're going to be hearing a lot, particularly over the next year, about discipleship. What's the Great Commission? What does Christ say? Go, therefore, and make church attenders. Go, therefore, and make pew warmers. Doesn't say any of those, as you know. Go, therefore, and make disciples. If I'm going to make a disciple, I probably better be one first. That's what we're going to talk about over the next year and more. We need to be disciples, not just people serving, that's an essential step, but people who are intimately walking with Jesus, growing in the knowledge of him, not just doing things, but being people of God. So the next one is family. We've talked a lot about that indirectly. So sacrificial servant leadership of the wife and in cooperation with the wife. Frankly, the man who does not listen to his wife is a fool. It doesn't mean that because she says it, you do it, because then you're not being a leader. But, you know, we always listen. We always need to listen. We don't want to all the time, particularly when it's something we don't want to do or it's something about us. Not that I've ever had that happen since yesterday, but it is something that we need to do. Work with cooperation, the cooperation of our wives, with the children for the good of the family and for the glory of God. It's a lot like military leadership, particularly, I think, infantry, guys like Chip Sniffen and others. First up, last to bed, and last in the chow line. And our sacrificial servant leadership is supposed to be like that. The family exemplifies to the world the relationship between Christ and the church, just like Paul says in Ephesians 5. Marriage exemplifies to our children the sacrificial servant leadership of Christ in our lives. So the way we treat our wives, the way we interact with them, and then the way husband and wife interact with the children is the dominant influence in shaping our children's walk with God. I know it's tempting, because I have fallen into this too, to say to the pastors and the staff, okay, they're here at Sunday school, over to you. As you know, the responsibility always falls on us, and the primary laboratory for helping our children to grow is us, is the family. I wish we still had that clock up there so I know, because otherwise Nate's going to come up here and pull me off the stage. Okay, the last one is the workplace, the one that is perhaps most familiar to us in terms of teaching. The first point is the man is responsible for providing for the family. I'm not going to ask for hands, but probably a substantial portion of men in here, their wives work. And that's great. That's the way your family, God has led you and your family to do it, but that doesn't relieve you of the responsibility. It doesn't relieve me of the responsibility. It's our responsibility is to ensure that the family is provided for. If my wife makes a lot more money than I do, that's wonderful, but the responsibility is still mine. Just as in Adam and Eve, when Eve ate the apple, whom did God hold responsible? Adam. Similarly with us in terms of providing for our family. At work, I need to be the best supervisor, the best coworker, the best subordinate that I can be. And here I quote you, Colossians 3:22, slaves, obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing the Lord. And that word eye service, as I point out in your notes, is literally eye slave. So what an eye slave does is to work hard or pretend to while the boss is there, and then when the boss is gone, the work's gone too. Men pleasers, looking for the favor of men rather than God. And with singleness of heart, the good thing is mentally honest. I'm genuinely trying to make my boss and my company or my organization successful, as far as I can do that within the limits of obeying God first. Obviously, I'm a drug dealer. I don't want to make my business successful. I don't want to even be in the business. But I'm seeking to make the business successful, make my country successful if I'm in the military. Even if I don't agree with the people at the top, remember 1 Peter 2:17, honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the emperor. I can pretty much guarantee that for the men in this room, for some of us, it was very hard to honor Joe Biden. For others of us, it's very hard to honor Donald Trump. That doesn't change anything. That's what we're responsible to do before God, is give them the honor that they're due. Doesn't say I like them, whichever one you choose. Doesn't say I like them. Doesn't say I think that they're great guys. But it says I believe that God put them there, and they're accomplishing the roles, accomplishing the work that he wants, whether or not they do it God's way, that he's sovereign over the results. This area of the workplace is one that I really had trouble with, particularly in the early year, well, throughout my time in the Navy and in the early years of my time in the intelligence community. I really stumbled over pride and just being unwilling to admit when I was wrong or when I'd fallen short. I also stumbled over, you see it there on the slide, fear of being found out, fear of other people knowing that I wasn't all that in a bag of chips. And those two things really made it difficult for me in my work life at times. Other times it was much better. And I would encourage you, if you're in this sort of same pit, is talk to other guys, even at your table, for example, and see how God might help you out of that, because trust me, it isn't a good place to be. Okay, next slide, please. This is a bonus. And I'm up here. You can't get me off the stage, at least quickly. So I'm going to say it anyway. Remember last week, you may remember, when Jack talked about the study, he talked about when Paul sent Titus, he sent him to Crete. Well, Crete, people on Crete are called Cretans from Crete. There's also an English word, Cretan. And I happened to look it up. It turns out it's really an interesting word. The word is derived from a French word, actually from the south of France. And just as now the word is used to describe people who are mentally challenged, so it was then. But the word they used to describe them was Cretan, which means Christian. And they did that to remind themselves that those people were just like me. They are me. And to remember that as they interacted with them. So, no charge for that one. There you go. Next slide, please, which is the questions. Okay. Three questions. What are the negative consequences in our world of men failing to exercise dominion over our flesh and in our church, family, and workplace? What examples have you seen, perhaps in yourself, of men confusing dominion and domination? And then lastly, in what areas do you feel that you need better to exercise dominion? Okay, and that's it. Over to your tables.